beautiful people, and welcome to the About That podcast with me, your host, your favorite geek psychologist, your favorite pop culture enthusiast, your favorite queen of the nerds, Dr. Vanessa Hintz. Today, lovely people, today, good friends, today, beautiful humans, we are back once again to talk about one of my most favorite things of ever and ever and ever, and that is the amazing, the incomparable television show, Supernatural. And today's focus is season 5 of Supernatural, which for many folk should have been the end. I don't necessarily like that word, but should is a word I hear often in conversations about this season. It was the intended end of the show by showrunner Eric Kripke. As we know, as some of you may know, the show went on for 10 seasons after that, much to my and many others' delight. And we're going to talk a little bit about it because I think something that for me is unique to Supernatural, unlike other shows that I have watched, there's sort of like this bookend here at the beginning from season 1 to season 5 that was sort of like an overarching story that very well could have ended and it didn't. I think it's just a very unique framing. This is, you know, seasons 1 through 5 are less than half of the entirety of the series. And again, for many people, those standalone seasons are peak Supernatural. Again, am I one of those people? Maybe yes, maybe no. I absolutely am very elated that the show went beyond season 5. And so we will get into all of the reasons why. So first and foremost, to set some context, so season 5 of Supernatural aired between September 10th of 2009 and May 13th of 2010. And so at the time of this recording, that was almost 15 years ago, which I can't even, I'm not ready to talk about that. Nonetheless, season 5 actually is ranked 100% by critics on Rotten Tomatoes. Now, as a scientist, I'm a psychologist, I'm a scientist, I will say that we have to take that 100% rating with a grain of salt, as that is based on 9 reviewers, which is not necessarily a lot. And I will also acknowledge that of those 9 people, they all said it was fabulous. So critics on Rotten Tomatoes, 100% ranking for season 5 of Supernatural. Comparing that to the audience ranking, which is about 76%, so still above average. According to a Screen Rant article from August 2023, season 5 is actually considered to be the best of the entire series, and I quote, "Originally, many fans believed that season 5 of Supernatural would be the last of the show. It is Eric Kripke's final season as the showrunner and the last season of the original story plan for the series, which is largely what makes it so great," end quote. So, flowers, praise galore for what was intended to be the final season of Supernatural. And according to IMDb, the highest rated episode of this largely beloved season was actually the finale, episode 22, entitled Swan Song. It received a 9.7 rating out of 10, which is actually, that makes it the highest rated episode of the entire series. And so you think about the fact that Supernatural has 327 episodes. The season 5 finale is the highest rated of all of those, which is followed very closely by another episode in season 5, episode 8, entitled Changing Channels, which received a 9.6 rating. And so again, largely beloved, largely heralded as absolute amazing television, cinematic, if you will. This season, though, let's keep it 100. This season was not without its not-so-great moments. And for me, unsurprisingly, that was absolutely the Paris Hilton episode, which was the lowest-rated episode of this season. Episode 5, Fallen Idols, a mere 7.9 rating, which some people may think that that's fine. I guess if we are comparing this to Supernatural season 5 standards, it's absolutely not good. And so I would say that was probably like a low point for me also. Like that whole episode was just a mess. Nonetheless, just a very, very well-received, beautifully done season. And to set context further, so at the end of season 4 of Supernatural, Sam realized he done messed up when he was drinking all that demon blood. He was all hopped up, all juiced up on this demon blood, having some sort of demon blood roid rage situation. At the end of season four, in the last episode, he kills Lilith, and her death ultimately triggers the apocalypse, which in season five standards is when Lucifer is released from hell. And so Sam and Dean, in this sort of melee that follows, they kill Ruby, who has been manipulating Sam during the entirety of season four, and then they run away, and literally all hell is breaking loose. Like, literally the ground is breaking beneath them as they run away, as Lucifer is breaking out of hell. And so that is the end of season four. Now, I didn't watch this live because, again, I was just a different person in 2010. And this is not what I was on. And so when I think you all have heard me say this before, I watched the entirety of Supernatural after it ended. So I could watch the episodes like at a pace, at a rate that was comfortable for me. So I don't know how people like used to watch stuff and then have to wait like months and months and months. Like, I don't think I've had to do that since. What's the most recent show I had to do that with? Chucky, actually, which that's a episode in itself. Chucky is, he is that dude. He's the GOAT. Anyways, so season five, just some plot notes to really recontextualize the story. So at the end of season four, again, Lucifer is sort of released from hell. And so the entirety of season five is Sam and Dean trying to stop him on Earth, right? Because it's like, whoa, what is he doing? We need to get this together because it's totally their fault that he's out, right? And Sam is really experiencing a lot of guilt surrounding Lucifer being released because he indeed broke the final seal to release him from hell. But, you know, we're not pointing fingers. Totally fine. We love you, Sam. They learn throughout the course of the season that Sam is actually meant to become Lucifer's vessel on Earth, which means that Sam's body is uniquely designed to hold Lucifer's essence, if you will. While on the other hand, Dean is meant to become the vessel of the Archangel Michael, who is destined, fated to battle Lucifer in the apocalypse, like some apocalyptic fight in which the world will begin anew, right? And so throughout this season, both Sam and Dean are really trying to avoid their fates as much as possible. They are sort of shunning this idea that they have to do this thing. The angels are telling them, you know, this got to be done. Just do your destiny and be done with it. But in true Winchester fashion, they're not having it. And so they spend the entirety of the season really trying to navigate this. Although nothing really goes the way that they want it to. They try so, so, so hard. They are so hellbent, pun intended, on stopping Lucifer, on not having to end up having this sort of apocalyptic brother battle. But it just doesn't work out for them. And through the course of this, Adam, their long-lost half-brother, ends up as Michael's vessel in Dean's stead, because Dean, in all of his sass and rebelliousness, is like, nah, Michael, we not about to be on that. While Sam, on the other hand, agrees for Lucifer to enter into his body because Sam essentially has a plan to trap Lucifer all over again, knowing that that means he will likely die. And so that is what's going on in season five. And mind you, just saying all of that made me tired. And so this season had a lot going on, because again, this was intended to be sort of like the last chapter of a 5-season storyline. And so thinking about how to wrap all of those things up in a way that is reflective of everything that we've seen Sam and Dean go through over these 5 years, and also exciting enough given sort of like the high stakes of what it is that they were dealing with. And so that's season five. And some things I'll just note initially, sort of overarchingly, about the season. So this is actually the first season that Misha Collins, aka Castiel, was promoted to series regular. So we see him more often than we did in season four. We are also introduced to the OG of Snark, Crowley, Demon King of Hell. Episode 10 of season five, titled Abandon All Hope, is the first time that we meet Crowley, and he probably has one of the most hilarious introductions of all time. We see him kissing Bobby because they have this sort of crossroads deal that they make, and that's how you seal the deal with the kiss. And the whole conversation that ensues afterwards is absolute hilarity. One thing I'll also say about season five, in addition to those character additions, is there was just, again, as I sort of outlined all of that, all of those plot points, there was just a sense of hopelessness, I think, throughout the season that was unlike any other. And I think for Supernatural, that's saying a lot, right? Like, they tend to always be dealing with something that is world-ending, apocalyptic. And season five was difficult. Like, it was difficult because, again, you see they're trying so hard. They're doing everything that they possibly can. And the closer and closer it gets to them sort of realizing that they have no more options, that they sort of lean into this hopelessness and this helplessness, like, it is intense. It is super intense as a viewer, even as somebody who's going through on a rewatch, right? Like, it was a lot. Like, it was tough to sit through. I found myself, like, going through this season at a little bit slower pace than I typically do because it was just a lot. Like, I needed to give my emotions a break. There was also sort of less comedic relief that we see between serious episodes. So typically, and you all have likely heard me say this before, one of the things I love about Supernatural is that they find a way to, even within episodes, balance comedy with these, like, really serious, morbid sort of existential themes. And I think in season five, there was less of a balance because there was so much that sort of, again, had to be tied up with these storylines that it was, I mean, it was intense. That doesn't mean it was bad. I want to sort of acknowledge that just because something is heavy doesn't mean it's bad. It's just heavy, right? I think that Jensen did well to portray the corresponding behavioral and emotional traits that we see out of someone who is experiencing hopelessness. Like, we could give a class on symptoms of hopelessness and helplessness just based on this season, right? Like, it was absolute, it was just absolute artistic perfection. It was amazing. And lest I be remiss if I did not also acknowledge something that has become sort of synonymous with Supernatural, which is, "Hey, ass butt." That was a quote that came in the final episode of season five, which, again, is amazing. And so season five, a whole lot going on, a whole lot of heaviness. And for me, transitioning into talking a little bit about what I appreciated about the season. So another character introduction that we got in season five is that of Death, the horseman of the apocalypse, Death. His entrance was super dope. Like, it was super dope. It was shot in a very sort of beautiful and cinematic way. The music in the background, like the slow-mo, it was dope. It was super dope. So Death's entrance, amazing. Sheriff Jody Mills has also entered the chat in season five, and she becomes a series regular and one of the amazing sort of female identified characters in the show that I think a lot of long-term fans of this series really identify with. And it's interesting to see her in these early seasons because I think what she becomes in later seasons is definitely different and is absolutely influenced by everything that she experiences early on. And so I appreciate Sheriff Jody Mills, played by Kim Rhodes, her introduction into this season. And in addition to the two episodes I sort of already talked about, the last episode, Swan Song, and also Changing Channels, there were two super amazing episodes, amazing to me for two different reasons. One would be episode 16, Dark Side of the Moon. And in this episode, Sam and Dean are actually in heaven after they are shot. And we learned that this is not the first time that they have been killed and have gone to heaven. This is just the first time that they remember. And so their entire experience and the way that the showrunners elected to portray what heaven is like, I think was interesting, right? And just the episode and the story and acting and the twists and turns. And it was so good. Like, that episode is absolutely amazing. I also particularly appreciate it because one of my favorite Dean cosplays is from that episode. And that would be the one where he is wearing a childhood outfit, a t-shirt with a teddy bear on it that says "I Love Hugs." Amazing. Amazing. Another episode that I particularly appreciate is episode 9, The Real Ghostbusters, and that is because that episode features what is in the show deemed to be the first ever supernatural convention, and the way that Sam and Dean interact with the convention goers, and to even see the way people that are super fans sort of interact with each other at the convention. It was just sort of like a full circle moment, if you will, as someone who is an avid con goer and as someone who loves something a whole lot and can get really excited talking about it with folks. I felt seen. Let me just say I felt seen. And I know that it was absolutely satirical in terms of how they portrayed the convention and con goers and that being so much a part of the supernatural fandom now, and I think fandom spaces in general, right? Like, there's something to be said. I mean, you can listen to any of my con episodes about what it's like to be in those spaces, and I think to have that built into the show was just another reason why I think Supernatural does well to not only invite us in as fans of the show, but also to sort of poke fun at itself, right? Phenomenal. In addition to all those things, there were definitely some aspects of season 5 that were not my favorite. One of which I've already sort of prefaced, and that is the fact that it was so heavy, right? And I talk about this with people in my life often, like my family, my students, anybody who will listen, really, that because my job is so heavy on a day-to-day basis, like holding space for people, doing work around equity and inclusion, a lot of my life is very heavy, right? And so when I am consuming entertainment, whether that be reading, watching TV, watching movies, I try to steer away from that. Like, for example, y'all, like when them Oscar lists come out about like Oscar movies or like everybody loved this movie, it was so serious. Like, I'm not about to watch that because I know any Oscar movie is about to be so intense. Like, no, thank you. And so the only thing that I voluntarily watch to this day that is super dramatic is The Young and the Restless. I've been watching The Young and the Restless since 2003, and I probably will never stop until they stop making it. It's been on for 50 years, and I just, like, that's my drama that I voluntarily consume, right? And, of course, Supernatural. As I mentioned, though, Supernatural does a good job of infusing comedy and other elements and fine menfolk into these very heavy storylines. And as I prefaced, like, season 5, there was just a lot of heaviness. A lot. And at this point, even if this is your first go around, at this point in season 5, you are likely fully invested in Sam and Dean and their journey and their relationship as brothers. And so it's even difficult to see the way that they're navigating the tension that they're experiencing, right? And from season 1, episode 1, right? Like, from the pilot episode, there is like drama and tension between them. Season 5 was next level because, again, not only do we still have, this sort of brotherly discord, we also have this overarching sort of weight of the apocalypse and hopelessness, right? And so it was just a lot, yo. And there's nothing wrong with that. Let me just reiterate that for the 511th time. There's nothing wrong with something being heavy, dramatic, and emotional. I just don't like feelings sometimes. And so, yeah, that was a lot for me. And I will also say that was a lot for me in the current context of my life, right? Like, there are times and spaces where maybe that won't be as intense, right? But the space I'm in my life, sort of contextually, it's a lot. It's a lot. Another thing that I didn't particularly care for in season 5, so in episode 6, titled I Believe the Children Are Our Future, we are introduced to Jesse, who we learn throughout the course of the episode is like the Antichrist. It's like this little tweeny bopper boy who we learn, like, he's all powerful and you know, we come into contact with him because Sam and Dean are coming to investigate this, like, series of weird deaths and accidents in this town, and they come to find out that it's being caused by sort of, like, the whims and the will of this young boy, Jesse, and then enter Castiel, and he's like, this child is the Antichrist, and it's like this whole thing, and he's like this all-powerful kid, and Sam and Dean are like, we're not about to kill him, he's a child, so they, you know, do some conniving and end up, like, sending him somewhere. He, like, goes away, And the reason that I don't appreciate this is because, legit, spoiler alert, throughout the course of the entire series, we never see or hear from Jesse again. Like, he was, like, wasted, right? Like, there's this episode, and it's like, oh, there's this, like, all-powerful Antichrist child. Like, whoa, this is intense. And then never should we hear from him again. And I don't know if that was, again, a result of, like, the change in showrunners. You know, there's bound to be plot holes when a series goes on for so long, and it just seemed like a really wasted opportunity. Spoiler alert, I would have liked to see Jesse come back, particularly when we're introduced to Jack, and maybe they could have had some, like, wild showdown. I don't know. But nonetheless, a wasted opportunity in my eyes. Similarly, I think something that was just a little bit difficult this go around in terms of watching, episode 20 titled The Devil You Know, is an episode that features like an epidemic, like a sickness, like a pandemic situation. And that definitely hits different post 2020 and post all of our first experiences of COVID. Like, it was watching it this time, it actually took me back. Like, at the time of this recording, we're about 4 years post sort of like when the pandemic really started to take shape, and remembering, for me, remembering what it was like in those early days when we literally had no idea what was going on, and we didn't know, like, do we need to wash our groceries? Like, what are we doing, right? Like, it reminded me of a lot of that, and that was an uncomfortable feeling. And so, again, doesn't mean it's bad. It was just an uncomfortable feeling. And so those, for me, were sort of like my high points, right? And so what I'm going to transition to now is talking a little bit about some more specific, sort of diving a little bit deeper into some of the psyche of this season, right? Or what are some of the things that I feel like were noteworthy? And the first I'm going to talk about is again, something that we hear for the first time in this season. And that is this idea of team, quote, free will, or this idea of free will. And so, again, that has become sort of like a calling card for the entirety of the series of Supernatural, Team Free Will, Team Free Will 2.0. And so I want to talk a little bit about free will. Like, what is that? What does that mean? What are some things for us to consider, right? And so, according to the American Psychological Association Dictionary of Psychology, free will is, quote, the power or capacity of a human being for self-direction. The function of the will is to be inclined or disposed toward an idea or action. The concept of free will then suggests that inclinations, dispositions, thoughts, and actions are not determined entirely by forces over which people have no independent directing influence. Free will is generally seen as necessary for moral action and responsibility, and is implied by much of our everyday experience, in which we are conscious of having the power to do or to forbear, end quote. And so the way this is sort of navigated or the way it manifests in season 5 is, again, in this idea of Sam and Dean being sort of fated or destined to serve as vessels for Lucifer and Michael, respectively, right? And so we see both of them sort of trying to navigate this idea that, and sort of come to terms with, conceptualize this idea that they have no choice as to whether or not they do that, because it's fate, because it's destiny. And so, again, the Winchesters, it's why we love them. They don't accept that, right? They don't take that. You know, they hear it and they reject it, right? And so this idea of team free will is first introduced in episode 13, titled The Song Remains the Same. And that's really the first time that we hear Sam, Dean, and Castiel refer to themselves as team free will. And so in this episode, Sam and Dean actually go back in time to the 70s, where they come into contact with their parents, who are young at this time, right? And this is Dean's second time, I think, navigating and coming into contact with his parents in the 70s. But this is Sam's first time. And I think one thing that I appreciated about that episode is when Sam sees his young mom for the first time, to me, his reaction is all of our reactions, right? Like, I think in season four, I think it is, when Dean goes back in time the first time to see his parents, like, he's just kind of cool with it. And Sam is literally sort of like, I don't want to say like awestruck, that's not the right word, but he's sort of like unable to move, unable to speak, right? He sees his mom, a younger version of his mom, and he's just kind of like, you know, which I think is absolutely how many of us would react. But nonetheless, in this episode, they go back in time and shenanigans ensue as they are attempting to protect their parents from an angel who has also come back in time. That is sort of the premise of Sam and Dean going back in time. There's a rogue angel named Anna that is like, well, I'm just going to kill your parents. So like both of you die too, right? Like if I kill your parents in the 70s, you all would never have existed. We can forego this whole apocalypse shenanigan. And they're like, no, let's not do that. And so over the course of this episode, some things happen. Things happen. And as they are sort of in the process of protecting their parents, the Archangel Michael appears and uses their dad, a younger version of John, as a vessel and has this whole dramatic monologue in true supernatural fashion. Like, what are we doing? In the middle of this battle, there's like this whole monologue. But anyways, there's this conversation between Dean and the Archangel Michael, who is inhabiting the body of his father. And in this sort of conversation, Michael says, quote, free will is an illusion. And that hit different, right? Like that hit different when, again, we understand that already throughout the course of this season, Sam and Dean are already like grasping at straws and doing everything within their power to sort of redirect their destiny, right? To change the trajectory of what all these angels and everybody keeps telling them that their life is, right? Like you are destined to have this fight, so stop fighting it. And I think the reason that hit me so much, right, is because as like a marginalized person or as a person who, you know, is told what you are supposed to be and what you are supposed to do or what your value is, right? Like to hear somebody say that like you think you can change it, but you absolutely can't. Like that shit hit different, right? Like as somebody who is a black person that does work around, you know, anti-racism or a black person that does work around equity and justice, feeling so often like what it is that I am attempting to bring about is so insurmountable. That shit hit different. When he said free will is an illusion, what I heard is you can try and try and try, but this shit is going to be how it is, right? And I was just like, damn, you know? And I think that that's part of why this season was difficult for me in my situatedness, right? As someone who is trying every day to be other than what people expect me to be. And again, those expectations are both sort of societal and cultural, as well as the expectations, you know, my parents or whoever has for me, right? Like there's, all of us have these expectations that we are navigating in whatever way works for us or whatever way is aligned with us or whatever way we're navigating them, right? Like we are not without those expectations. And I think that there are times when those expectations can become absolutely overwhelming. And for me and for watching this season and particularly Dean, right, as he is trying so hard, fighting tooth and nail to not succumb to what the angels keep asking him to do, right? Like just let Michael enter your body, which sounds like all kinds of violating, right? But just let Michael enter your body and let's do this thing. And he's just like, no. And there's points where you see, and there's points in the season where he, like that sort of resolve slips. And as someone who, again, sort of battles my own version of that on a daily, I'm like, damn, I feel you. I feel you. I feel you, Dean. He tired, yo. Like, he's tired of swimming upstream. It's tiring. It's exhausting to not just do and be the way the world or others expect you to be, even when that doesn't align with you, right? And that is, to me, this notion of free will, this notion of I don't have to give in to those expectations, I am empowered, is beautiful to me. As a therapist, as a mentor, as a professor of students, my goal is always to empower other people. Don't do what I say just because I said it. I want you to feel empowered to do what is most authentic to you. And that is what I think in this instance, free will is a manifestation of. Free will is you doing whatever the F is most authentic and aligned with you, right? And so this sort of concept and this idea of free will and the enormity of the expectation and shoulds that were placed on Sam and Dean throughout this season, so much, right? And I think, you know, to transition to talking a little bit about hopelessness, part of Dean's hopelessness, I think, was a result of this just sort of utter exhaustion and feeling like, sort of feeling what Michael said, and that free will is an illusion. I have no control over what happens next. And again, people navigating the world in which they are disempowered, in which they are marginalized, in which they are oppressed, there are many a times, probably more often than not, when folks can feel like they have no control. Why would I try when it doesn't matter what I do, right? And that is and can breed a sense of hopelessness and helplessness. And so hopelessness, according to the APA Dictionary of Psychology, is, quote, the feeling that one will not experience positive emotions or an improvement in one's condition. Hopelessness is common in severe major depressive episodes and other depressive disorders, and is often implicated in suicides and attempted suicides, end quote. And so from a sort of clinical mental health perspective, I remember learning that in graduate school when I was going through my own training to become a psychologist, that when hopelessness sort of enters into the symptom picture, we are dealing with a different type of depression, right? Hopelessness is one of those things that we would identify as risk factors for severe depression, and as the definition described, also for suicide and self-harm. And so, again, I think in this season, something that they did beautifully, which is why it was so difficult to sort of navigate, is to portray people, I would argue, Dean mostly throughout this season, in this state, right? And from the very beginning. So episode one of season five is titled Sympathy for the Devil. And in this episode, Meg says to Dean, you simpering wad of insecurity and self-loathing. And so she, throughout this season, right, calls him in and calls him up to sort of his, like, she sees beyond this mask, this facade of I don't give a shitness that he portrays. And she, and I think that that is sort of what we get a glimpse into as the season progresses, as all the seasons progress, right? Like, Dean is sort of the classic sort of, like, he's projecting what he wants to feel when it is absolutely the opposite of how he actually feels. And so I think that, again, that is hopelessness that's starting to creep in. In episode 7, The Curious Case of Dean Winchester, which, yes, it is the episode where Dean is older. He sort of, there's a poker game where he loses, and then he then loses years off of his life, and so he becomes like an old man. Nonetheless, there is a scene at the end of this episode where Bobby, you know, Dean is, he's fine. He's no longer an older guy. He's back to his regular, schmegular self. And there is a scene at the end of this episode where Bobby and Dean are talking, and Bobby is talking very openly about experiencing suicidal thoughts. And in the context of this conversation, Bobby says, quote, I ain't a hunter no more. I'm useless. And so that, again, is a manifestation of hopelessness. If I am not this, then what? That difficulty coping with managing a sort of significant life transition, such as we saw with Bobby, who not only became disabled in terms of not being a wheelchair user and not being able to walk. As a result of that, everything that he was and everything that he did, he was no longer able to do. And so his inability to sort of reframe his purpose and refine his purpose and his value way of being, I would argue, sort of influence these feelings of hopelessness. And in the course of this content or this conversation that he had with Dean in this episode, Dean says to him, "Don't you dare think about checking out." And that moment, like, it was something that was very, it was a very, like, 1 to 2 minutes at the end of this episode that, again, had its own sort of comedic relief in that we get to see an older Dean, like, trying to navigate what it's like to be in an older body. But this moment that they had with each other where, again, Bobby shows this vulnerability and is very open about how he feels, and Dean's like, "No, we're not doing that. Like, we love you and we're not doing that." It was just, it just reminded me of, as a therapist, what we hope to see for people who are struggling with feelings of hopelessness or experiencing, you know, a lack of worth or feeling like they don't know where or why they belong, to have people in your life that will tell you unabashedly and unapologetically, like, "No, we want you here and we need you. We love you," right? We talk about that all the time when we talk about suicide prevention. Like, it is better to tell someone that than to have to say it at their funeral. You know what I'm saying? And so, again, something that I think they did just absolutely beautifully. In another instance in this season, episode 11, titled Sam Interrupted, Sam and Dean go undercover in a psychiatric hospital on a case where they absolutely are forced to confront some very long-standing issues that they have, not only with each other, but also sort of their own, what I would call internal or intrapsychic issues. And so there's a scene in which Sam says, "Dean, you always do this. You can't just keep this crap in." And I remember Dean's response was, "Yes, because that's how we keep going." There's a doctor lady who, spoiler alert, is actually not real. She's like a hallucination. But there's a doctor lady that Dean is talking to, and in their conversations, she says, "That's a crushing weight to have on your shoulders, to feel like 6 billion people's lives depend on you. How do you even get up in the morning?" Right? So she's really calling in and calling up the fact that the responsibility and sort of the way that Dean brings meaning and value to his life, like, that's a lot, bro. Like, how do you even navigate that? Like, that's a lot. And then at the end of the episode, when, again, Sam is really inviting Dean to talk about everything that just happened and all that they just went through, Dean says to Sam, "You're going to take all that crap and you're going to bury it, because that's how we keep going." And as a professional, I would like to say two things. One, I am not going to judge anyone that represses things in that way, because you do what you have to do to survive, right? Like, so there are mechanisms for managing our emotions that are absolutely necessary in order to survive and do what we need to do to go to work, to pay our bills. I'm going to say that. And part two, I am going to say that I used to say this to my clients. Emotional energy is like, you know, the emotions and feelings. It's like water backing up in a pipe. There's only so long that you can sort of keep it all contained. And if you are not careful to manage how you express, release emotions, they can consume you, right? And so, believe me, I'm looking in the mirror when I say this to myself. I'm absolutely one of those people that will push some stuff down so that I can do what I need to do, right? Like, I don't have time, compartmentalize. I don't have time to deal with this. I don't have time to manage this because I have to go to work, because I have to pay my bills. I understand that. And I'm not telling you that you should not do that. What I am going to invite everyone to do, and what I am going to empower everyone to do, is to engage with those emotions in a way that is safe for you and authentic to you. So if that means that every day for 10 minutes you sit in silence when you come home, then that's what it means. It doesn't mean you have to cry. It doesn't mean you have to do this. It means that you do it in a way that allows you to release it, release emotions in a way that, again, aligns with you and your way of being. For me, that's taking a walk every day. I take the same little loop around my neighborhood. That's sort of like my decompression time. Because does that mean I cry on my walk? Sometimes. Sometimes I'll be listening to my audiobook and be turned up. Other times I'm just outside and not thinking about anything, right? And so I think that, again, to return to this idea of hopelessness, part of that is sort of facilitated by this what we call rumination, or continuing in this sort of loop, this line of thinking that is either avoidant, like I feel all this way and I'm just not going to think about it, and or this sort of cycle of everything is terrible and it's never going to get better, right? And so again, I think the way that they showcase this and this season, phenomenal. And the last thing I'll say, which again has become sort of like a staple in every conversation I have about Supernatural, is I just really want Sam and Dean to work their shit out. And I think it's clear in season 5 that they don't know how, right? Like, they do not trust each other. They would gladly lay their lives down for the other. They don't trust each other and they are not honest. And I would argue that they have not done that their entire lives. And so the expectation that we have that they would do that when they're grown adults is maybe not fair to them. And so in this season, at the end of episode 2, titled Good God, Y'all, Sam and Dean actually go their separate ways. So they decide, like, you go do you and I'm gonna go do me. This, and in sort of like a classic psychological sense, is what we would call avoidance, right? And returning again to this dictionary of psychology, avoidance is, quote, the practice or an instance of keeping away from particular situations, environments, individuals, or things because of either A, the anticipated negative consequence of such an encounter, or B, anxious or painful feelings associated with them. Similarly to what I mentioned about like repressing your emotions, avoidance is not inherently bad, right? Again, sometimes avoidance is necessary. Sometimes avoidance can be healthy. Sometimes avoidance is just what we got to do, right? And other times, avoidance can be a mechanism for us to not face things that make us uncomfortable, right? So at the end of episode 4 in season 5, titled The End, Sam comes back to Dean after them being apart for 2 episodes, which I don't like when they're apart. I don't like that at all. When they're in different spaces, I don't like that. And so I was very excited when they came back together. But at the end of episode 4, Sam comes back and Dean says to him, "We're not stronger when we're together, Sam." And even though he says this to him, they get back together at the end and it's just so awesome. And so this is sort of prompted by Dean having another time traveling experience, but this time he goes to the future, and he goes 5 years in the future, and he has an experience with Sam, who in this sort of future has allowed Lucifer to enter him as the vessel. And Lucifer Sam is like just out here with this whole, I think he had this like white Colonel Sanders suit on. After Dean sort of has this encounter with Lucifer Sam, he decides, like, you know, I don't want that to happen to my brother. So maybe it is better that we are together, right? And so in this instance, Dean is unable to avoid this sort of potential outcomes of his actions, right? Because he's sort of in this like future state. He's like talking to his future self. This is like a whole like Inception, like Matrix type shit moment. You know what I'm saying? It was a lot. Okay. It was a lot to follow. And I think that what I appreciate about this is that when Dean finally confronts what he is so worried about, what he has been spending all this time avoiding, he survives it, number one. And it also allows him to pattern his steps differently. And we see that difference in the very last episode of the season in Swan Song, where Dean comes back and Lucifer Sam is like beating his ass. And he says in between punches to the face, "It's okay, Sammy, I'm not going to leave you." And even talking about that now, I'm like getting like teary, because it was just, it was such a different sort of way of engaging than we saw, again, in the sort of hopelessness of the beginning of the season, right? And throughout the season. And for Dean to be there at the very end, right? And he said, "I'm not going to leave you. I'm not going to leave you here by yourself." It was just, it was beautiful. And so I think the moral of this conversation about avoidance, about hopelessness and repressing your emotions, and about like free will, right? And feeling like a lack of control. None of those things are inherently bad. None of those things are inherently terrible. I think what can make them, quote, terrible, is when we accept them as the only way, right? So we accept that there's nothing I can do. We accept that there's no way I can manage my emotions. We accept that I'm too scared to be uncomfortable, so I'm going to avoid all of this, right? Like, when we accept these things as the only way and become sort of rigid and stuck in that, that's when these things can become problematic. They're not problematic in their own right, but they can become so. And with that, good peoples, I feel like today was like real serious, which makes sense that after everything I said about this season and how like intense it was, like, oh my goodness. So it makes sense that this whole conversation has not only exhausted me in talking so much, but it's also like exhausted my feelings and emotions. And so if you are feeling something similar after listening to this, I say welcome, and I invite you to notice that without judgment, right? Like, I don't want you to judge yourself for feeling like, damn, this is heavy. It absolutely is. And it's okay to notice that. It's okay to also like not want to feel this way all the time, right? And so with that, I'll bring us to my sort of about that moment related to Supernatural Season 5, compliment sandwich style. So first, starting with things that I enjoyed, and I sort of prefaced this at the outset. One, I'm very happy that the series didn't end here, partly because that would have been super depressing. Like, if that was the end of the series, it would have been beautiful. Like, narratively, cinematically, it would have been amazing. And I'd have been super sad. Like, I'd have been super sad. Although, for those of you who have watched the series in its entirety, you know the final episode of the series is also super sad. It doesn't end that way, but it's super sad. So anyways, not to give anything away. Again, something that I want areas for improvement. I don't like to say things that are bad or weaknesses, but areas for improvement. Particularly for our beloved Sam and Dean. Like, I want them to get some help. Like, I want y'all to get some therapy, some self-help books, okay? Because, again, there's nothing wrong with the way that they are navigating the world, because I think they are constantly in a state of surviving. Like, I want them to thrive, though. I want them to be in a space where they can thrive. They don't just have to survive. And I'm also saying that to myself, because I want that for myself and other people that feel like they are navigating the world just day by day. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. And it can be exhausting, right? And so I'm also considering, what does it look like for someone in Sam's and Dean's positions to thrive when literally their life, their experiences, their work is about survival? That is a question, my friends, that I do not have the answer to. So what I will say in closing is this entire season was phenomenal. Heavy? Yes. Intense? Yes. Did I want to shake someone by the shoulders? Yes. Nonetheless, it was absolutely phenomenal, and it makes sense that it receives all the accolades and all the flowers that it does, because this is amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And so with that, good people, I hope that you take care of yourself as you need to, should this conversation be causing you to feel some kind of way. It's definitely, I feel some kind of way. So after this, I'm going to do something to ground myself. Again, not to judge how I'm feeling, but to notice it and to ground myself so as to not feel further sort of out of control, for lack of a better word. And so with that, good people, thank you as always for your time, for your attention, for your engagement. I appreciate you. I wish you and your family safety, health, and joy. Until next time.